Hello, welcome back to chapter 11 in the series The Gita Decoded. As you know, in this chapter, God reveals himself to Arjuna, and Arjuna's reaction is a strong one. We are now at the second part of chapter 11, where we see the interplay between Sanjaya, who reveals what happened, and how the conversation between God and Arjuna ensues. Sister Denise is with us in the studio to share her understanding of this. Thank you for being with us. Very warm welcome to you.
Thank you.
Sister Denise, I would like to start on verse 35, where we meet Sanjaya again, and he says, Sanjaya spoke, the text reads, having heard this utterance of Krishna, Arjuna with joined palms, trembling, prostrating himself, terrified and bowing down, thus spoke in a choked voice to Krishna. We meet Arjuna in verse 35, humbled, in awe and overcome with what he experienced about God. He never knew that this is what God is. He never knew. And there are many, Sister Denise, who would like to see God as he is, the way he is, and yet don't. How does Arjuna reach that stage where God trusts Arjuna in such a way that he reveals his full identity to him? Terrifying though it was, it's not an experience that Arjuna wishes he never had, because he asked for it and he got it. He wasn't harmed by it, but he was still terrified.
You know, God knows who everyone is, so he knows what Arjuna can take, and he knows that other people can't take. You see, God has within himself the sanskaras of knowledge. That means the sanskaras, he knows all the scenes of the beginning, continuation, and end of the world. So when he reveals himself, he's revealing what he knows. And so it's not that he is what he knows. What he knows is what he knows. And Arjuna has to see what God knows. And in a sense, what he knows makes him what he is. God is the only being who can endure on an eternal level, knowing all these things consciously forever. And that's what makes him non-human, or that's part of what makes him non-human. So for Arjun to see what there is in a non-human is scary beyond imagination. But at the same time, it's doable, you see. So God pulls him onto God's own level for a glimpse, and then sets him back down. And of course, he's trembling and, what happened here, you know?
Yeah.
But he survives it, yeah.
Yeah. Sister Denise, from verse 36 to verse 46, Arjuna's response to seeing God is set out. And he says in verse 44, therefore, bowing down, prostrating my body, I ask forgiveness of you, O Lord, as is a father to a son, a friend to a friend, a lover to a beloved. Please, O God, be merciful. Having seen that which has never been seen before, I am delighted. Verse 45, and yet my mind trembles with fear. Show me that form, O God, in which you originally appeared. Have mercy, Lord of gods, dwelling of the universe.
Yes.
I desire to see you wearing a crown, armed with a club, discus in hand as before. Become that four-armed form, O thousand-armed one, you who have all forms. Now we find Arjuna asking God, please revert to your gentlest form.
Well, not exactly. This is the Vishnu. Mm. The club is not particularly gentle.
No.
The discus is a weapon.
Mm.
He's wanting to see Vishnu. So the universal form, when you see in the path of bhakti, when people show God in the universal form, they show Vishnu, or they show this combination of all the people, all the castes, all the elements of matter, both of them, is the universal form according to the depictions. So here is Arjuna, who has seen the destruction of the world and is saying, now show me yourself as Vishnu. Vishnu means the sustainer. So you've got, again, a reference to the Trimurti, the Trinity, Brahma, Vishnu, Shankar. So he says, no, let's go back to Vishnu. But that's still more awesome than simply Krishna. Yeah.
Okay. And so we hear what the response is in verse 47. The Blessed Lord spoke, "By my grace toward you, Arjuna, the Supreme Form has been manifested through my own power. This form of mine, made up of splendor, universal, infinite, primal, which has never been seen by other than you." God trusts Arjuna a great deal, doesn't he?
Well, I don't know about that. I would say he knows who he is, and he knows that he is the one and only human being who is of that caliber. That means this is the highest among humans. So you have God and the highest among humans who are able to really be really close to each other. So in that sense, Arjuna is the first creation, which you can also consider to be Adidev. You know, when we look at a comparison with what we learn in Brahma Kumaris, we also see that Prajapita Brahma is considered to be Arjuna, is considered to be the highest among all human souls, and able to experience God, see the vision, understand everything, and become the instrument for creation, hence the name Brahma, but who has to also take that form of the sustainer, because God himself, which is also mentioned, becomes the witness, becomes the detached observer, reverts to his place in the world of Nirvana while the creation plays out. So the sustenance of the creation has to be done by Vishnu, which is the combined form of Brahma Saraswati, who become then Radha Krishna, Lakshmi Narayan, which is all of which is Vishnu, you see. And here what happens is people mix up the highest human and God. And you have something a little bit similar in Christianity, where the Christ in some cases is considered to be God, in some cases is the Son of God, and so there is this ambivalence about the identity, you see. And in the same way, the ambivalence between Vishnu, human form, and then incorporeal God. So this is something that is really, in a way, you can say, out of range of humans, and only God can describe these things, and he will only do it at the time of the Gita episode, which means at the time of the Great World War, which means at the time of the end of the Kali Yuga, whereupon the world as we know it collapses totally and then is regenerated, you see. And this is something difficult for people to consider. But scientists have said, you know, according to the conventional science, that there have been 6 mass extinctions according to their records of the paleontology, the geological record. So there is something to say that every so often the whole thing collapses and starts off again. But nobody knows exactly the details. So in the Gita, you've got some clues. In the geological record, you have some clues. You have myths all over the world. And what we need to do now is try and piece it all together. And so if God is here, explaining these things again, and we are at that time again, then it means that God is going to enable us to understand what previously was just a wild imagination, you know.
Verse 49, God acquiesces, and it is stated, "Have no fear or confusion on seeing this terrible form of mine. Be again free from fear and cheered in heart. Behold my," in brackets, "previous form." Okay, and once again we meet Sanjaya, who says, "Having spoken thus to Arjuna, Krishna revealed his own previous form again. Having resumed his gentle, wonderful appearance, he calmed Arjuna, who was terrified." Is Krishna returned?
Yeah, this is Krishna.
But then,
so you have Vishnu.
We don't see Vishnu.
Then you have Krishna, but you had Vishnu earlier. You see, and this is the thing. It is known that Krishna and Vishnu is one and the same. It is known that Lakshmi and Narayan is also Vishnu. So there are a lot of things that are unclear. But when you analyze it, you can see that he has to show himself in the simple Krishna form, but that Arjuna knows, having been sort of opened up to be able to see the universal form and the destroyer, which he then immediately links to the sustainer, Vishnu. And then God says, okay, let's go back to normal perception, which is Krishna, this friendly Krishna.
In the remaining verses of chapter 11, God acknowledges to Arjuna that it is difficult to see him, to see God. In verse 52 it reads, "The blessed Lord spoke, 'This form of mine which you have beheld is difficult to see. Even the gods are constantly longing to behold it.'" And in verse 54, "By undistracted devotion alone can I be known and be truly seen in this form and be entered into, Arjuna." And the last verse reads, "He who does all work for me, considers me as the supreme, is devoted to me, abandons all attachment, and is free from enmity toward any being, comes to me, Arjuna." Heart verse, yes. Very much a heart verse. We go through this entire old gambit of emotions vicariously with Arjuna. We experience what he's experiencing, and I think that is why the persons who actually put this into writing allowed us to see this through the eyes of the narrator, because we haven't met the narrator in the previous 10 chapters. And now it's no longer a head thing. We come to the feelings. I thought one should actually print it, magnify it, and put it next to your mirror at home, because for any seeker of God, Sister Denise, this is it. The message is very clear, isn't it? God is saying, "This is what I ask of you." Yeah, very clear. But it's so touching. It's so touching. Yes. Because, Sister Denise, there are millions of devotees, millions of people who share Arjuna's hunger for God, but yet do not experience what Arjuna has experienced, because they are not doing what they're supposed to. And this gives the message very clearly, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It's interesting. Another aspect is, you know, only a very sincere devotee who has had devotion over many, many births can actually have a vision of God. And God will confer a vision of himself, but not on everybody. Now, anybody who has had a vision, they're extremely dramatic. They're absolutely...
Sorry, is it dramatic or traumatic?
dramatic.
Dramatic. Okay.
It can be traumatic
can
too.
Be. Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
But absolutely unforgettable for the rest of your life. You remember each and every detail of the vision. It sears itself onto your soul, you know. So a vision is not an ordinary thing. It's not like a fantasy. It's not like a dream. A vision is that you get absolutely into a completely different reality. And you see something that nobody else can see. And historically, there are stories of different people who have had huge visionary experiences, which are life-transforming. And here you have Arjun, who's seeing the vision of God, the universal form. This changes everything for Arjun, you see, and it makes it possible for him to do something which was absolutely impossible until he sees that vision. So he's a different person after that vision. And of course, God comes and quietens him and calms him, and okay, now, you know, let's get back to normal reality. This was a vision, but did you get it? Did you understand it? You see, it's like that.
Is it Denise? I'd like to ask you to tell us again the importance of the divine eye in all of this, because it's fascinating to me that the divine eye was opened and Arjuna was able to experience all of this.
You see, there's this word Divya Buddhi,
yes,
and Divya Drishti.
Yes.
So it's translated as the divine eye, but it also means vision, you see. So God can give you a vision. Now, opening the third eye is to enable you to see that which is invisible. That's different. So God will give you both divine vision and open up your third eye, but he will not give it to many. You know, here is only Arjun. You're the one and only person who I'm going to allow to see me in this way. So you are special among humans, you see, the number one human soul. So one thing is to appreciate God, the number zero soul, who is non-human, and then out of all the human beings, who is the best one? Who is the one closest to God? Arjun, who is then transformed into Vishnu.
Sure. Wow. Take us again through the difference between God doing and being.
It's all a question of this concept that what is contained in a human being is their role. So a human being has to perform their role. So he says to Arjuna, this is the film, this is the scene, you're the actor, you play this scene in this way. But even if you don't, anyway, the scene is there because that's the scene. And I know, but I'm the creator, I'm the director. So this is the scene, and the scene is you have to kill. And anyway, they're already dead. So all you have to do is be the instrument and play your role. Now God, you open up the sanskaras of God. It's not about action, that he will have to do one action after another chronologically like a human soul has to do. You open up the sanskaras of God and you see the totality of the history of the world is contained within him. So he knows it. And by knowing it, it is caused to happen. So each of us are the actors. We perform whatever our allotted role is. So there's this aspect of destiny. And God is the knower of destiny. Sometimes he is called as the provider of destiny. He will say, this is your role, this is your role, this is your role. But it's all already destined. It's already happened. And every so often it happens again because everything is cyclical. So the thing that we are being shown is that how God is not a human soul, but what kind of a soul is he? And that is a soul who has the sanskaras of the entire story of creation. So he knows himself and he knows the creation, and this is God. And the creation ends up in the destruction, and then it starts again.
Is there any final thoughts that you would like to leave viewers with in this episode? We're not done with chapter 11 yet. We do not have time today to do the synopsis. We'll take it up in the next episode. But would you like to leave viewers with any last thoughts before we say goodbye to an audience that is sitting rapt in tension?
I think I would just say that, you know, God is generally considered as incomprehensible, indefinable, impossible to know. And that is also very true. A human being cannot figure out God. But here in the Gita, God is saying, this is me, this is how I am, this is who I am. I'm showing myself to you, but it's still requires a lot of interpretation. Mm. You see, and interesting that it is Sanjay who describes it to the king, Dhritarashtra, who is, you know, Sanjay has the gift of clairvoyance. So not only can he see what's happening remotely, but he can also see the vision that Arjun is seeing, which is quite interesting.
Hmm. Yeah, okay. Wow, this has been quite a chapter, hasn't it, Sister Denise? I think from all the chapters that we've gone through so far, it reveals the most about God. Everything else was words, but this was more experiential. Why would you say that is?
Well, you know, going to a lecture on heaven and going to heaven is the same difference. Mm. You know, when you actually experience God and when you hear about God, it's a very different thing.
Yeah.
There's nothing better than direct experience.
Yeah. Okay, there you have it. We expected to cover more today, but I'm kind of glad we didn't, because Sister Denise has shared what the second part of chapter 11 means, the text, the metaphors, the allegorical context in which it was written. And I think, like me, many of you would have experienced what Arjuna experienced when he saw God. We felt his fear, we felt his awe, we felt his wonder at seeing what God is and who God is. And I ask that you hold that experience with you. I was particularly taken by what is contained in verse 55, and I'd like to read it again because I think it encapsulates the entire message of the Bhagavad Gita. He who does all work for me, considers me as the supreme, is devoted to me, abandons all attachment, and is free from enmity toward any being, comes to me, Arjuna. From the time I've taken up studying this text, I sense that the reason that you're watching and the reason that we're sitting here is because there's a bit of Arjuna in us, and that is why we're attracted to God as Arjuna is. So I hope that the message contained in chapter 11 sits deep with you. I hope that you are able to carry it to your friends and family, and I hope that you are able to find that this episode enriches your life as it has enriched mine. Thank you so much for joining us, and I do hope to see you soon. Thank you and goodbye.